Hello, everyone, and welcome to Total Football Debate podcast episode 36. It's been a little while, but the four of us are back together again. Long show incoming, as per usual, when all four of us get on the same show. It's good to be back after a couple of us had a break. Jason Cossey had everything in good hands, and I'm sure we'll pick up today and talk about Arsenal's transfer activity now that Cookie's here. And we'll also discuss all the teams such as Spurs, Palace, Norwich and Arsenal in the FA Cup. Oh, sorry, I forgot to mark that one off. That was an old script. I was expecting it to be there anyway, so I do apologise.
This is going to be a long one for me, isn't it?
But are we doing all right, Cookie? It's been a little while since we've been on the show. You doing okay?
Well, we'll see after 2 hours. After, I'm sure I get to hear Mr. Bastards and Mr. Costi's opinions on everything that's been happening in the last 2 weeks.
Not opinions, mate, just facts. Only facts on this show, only facts.
Opinions from you. Most of them I'll probably share, to be honest. I ain't really got a lot to leg to stand on with most of what's going on, because even I don't know what half of going on at the minute.
Don't worry, Cookie. TFD will put up a... if you've been affected by this at the end of the show.
Be like some slow, sad
I
news.
I shall be ringing the number after the show.
That's funny.
Have you been affected by today's show? Please call the helpline.
Well, we have obviously got a bit to talk about since the deadline day. Not much happened in that final hour once Jason Cossey left the airwaves. But we now know how teams are kind of standing, I guess, and sort of lining up these days. So we've got, how many games in the FA Cup were there? There were quite a few. So we've got to run through as many of them as possible where relevant. Obviously, the ones that we can breeze over, we will. But to be quite honest, there were a couple of decent results in there that we will no doubt get to grips with. And I'm sure a few of us have got a few opinions. But I'm going to start somewhere unexpected, because we need to give a round of applause to a certain country winning their first African Cup of Nations tournament. As exciting as the final was, speaks for a lot about the tournament in general, I think, because there was quite a lot of nil-nils and board draws. But congratulations to Senegal beating Egypt in the final on penalties.
That was a big, big pen for Mane, considering he missed one.
Yes, correct.
That was huge.
It was a big moment. I was happy, actually. I wanted Senegal to do the job, just because, you know, what's that now? The seventh team to have won it in so many years. It's a good little tournament. Someone made a really good point, actually, and it might be something we need to touch on. Why don't teams that win the African Cup of Nations or Copa America or Euros automatically get into the World Cup?
Fair point. I don't know, to be honest, I don't know the background, but I do think it makes sense if you win your continent's trophy that's respective to your region.
Yeah, because you're representing that continent, ain't you? You're the best team going into it.
You should automatically, you'll be the highest ranked. Clearly, they'll now become the highest ranked, or presumably the highest ranked team in that region. I see no reason why they shouldn't be.
What an honour as well. You know, you're massive. Leading your continent into the World Cup. I mean, imagine if the countries that were involved in that competition as well. What an incentive to sort of get to the World Cup. I don't know really why that's not allowed. But it was a really good point, and I looked at it and I thought, actually, I'm surprised that wasn't the case anyway. Whether it's because of how often it happens, because it happens every 2 years, so would that mean you'd automatically put the two winners into the World Cup? I don't know. But even that, I don't see the problem with that.
Yeah, not being funny, there's so many teams. The World Cup's just getting bigger and bigger, and it's a global entity. So two teams, what's that going to do? Well, when two countries host a World Cup, the both countries automatically go in, so there's no difference between two winners over the 2 years or 4 years.
What are they going to do if England, Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales all host the World Cup? They're going to put all four in?
I was going to say, well, Africa only got five teams going into the World Cup. I think that's what you were saying. I mean, that's mad, really.
Massive as well.
It's a big continent.
When you think of memorable moments in the World Cup, I know we're digressing a little bit here off the African Cup of Nations, but a lot of the moments that I think of are have an African team involved.
Ghana,
well, for the wrong reasons, but their whole tournament that year. Senegal's the first goal of the 2002 World Cup with a dance around the shirt. You know, the South Nigerian Africa. Football kit, South Africa, yeah. So many moments. And I do when I see like people talking about the tournament, I know they don't do themselves any favours with some of the stuff that's going on in the tournament, but that's another topic altogether. I don't want to be too political or stereotypical. But yeah, it surprised me actually. And I thought, what a good point, bearing in mind if you win your national league, you go into the Champions League. I would have thought that might have been implemented, but FIFA and UEFA are completely different. Anyway, did anyone catch the game? And does anyone have anything to say about the first obvious issue with that penalty shootout?
Salah, why would you do it? He's your best player. I think Carragher said it, or can't remember where I read it this morning now. But very rarely does a penalty shootout go to five penalties. So surely you'd have him, if not first, laying down the marker, at least second. But then if not that, you'd have him in your top four takes.
Five. The thing is, with it is just an ego thing, isn't it? Not being fun of it. They want the star man to score the winning penalty, but it doesn't always happen that way. Mane got the limelight. He's their star player, so he's the one that's remembered for it. So the star player in that team did. However, it's only because that, like, Salah wasn't there to be able to put pressure on the final penalty taker. It is madness, really.
Salah will leave that tournament now thinking he could have made a difference and he didn't even step up and take it. That's the problem.
Why did he not step up and take it first and lead by example? You go and score that first penalty and you motivate the rest of your team.
Well, Salah gets a lot of plaudits, but he clearly has an ego thing going on because at some point in that game, the referee went to hand him, I think it was the final, the semi-final, I can't remember now, I think it was just, he went to hand him his cards and his whistle and said, would you like to ref the game, didn't he? So, you know, Salah gets pinned up as this, you know, charitable friend, and I'm sure he is all of the above, but he definitely has an air of arrogance about him, you know, aka Ronaldo type arrogance, where
Starman.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, but if you're in a major tournament and your ego is that big that you're adamant you want the fifth penalty, as a professional footballer, knowing the law of averages says that the chances of it getting to a fifth penalty is unlikely, but it's the difference between your country winning the African Cup of Nations or not. Why are any player worth their salt? I mean, for me, that's ridiculous. Mane did it, granted, but then Senegal, you didn't look at their players and think, oh, why is he taking a penalty? Like Koulibaly, for example, was the first penalty taker up. Now, he's a centre-back, but clearly he was confident and he was captain. So that was in the game plan. But for Salah to sit there and say, I want to be last. I mean, if you're that hungry, if it was Messi, put it this way, if it was Messi in Argentina in that same moment, Messi would be first up. Or second, without a shadow of a doubt. I don't think Messi goes fourth or fifth.
Can you change the order? Because if that was the case, if a penalty had been missed and you need to score the next penalty full stop, surely you'd be like, right, I'm up, sod it.
You can't change it once the list is in, that's it.
That's what I wondered, but still, it's sort of like, well, surely you want the stats at the end of the game to be like, right, yeah, I stepped up, I scored. And if you're a big enough player, people remember that rule, full stop, don't they?
What is with that rule anyway? Like, what is the problem with tactically changing your lineup as the penalties go in and or not? Like, you can play mind games with the penalty shootout. Like, oh, I bet Ronaldo steps up last. And then he steps up second. You're like, fuck. Now,
also, I saw another thing as well. Why don't they do the ABBA tiebreak type thing with tennis when it comes to penalties as well? They tried it once, but whoever gets the first penalty has a huge advantage, really, don't they?
I actually, in terms of the list of five being submitted, I quite like that rule and I think that should stick. And I think only because obviously it can get tactical and you can change and blah, 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 great. But actually, the bottle and the mentality it then takes to step up and take that penalty, knowing that it's you or nothing, I think actually that's part of the drama. One thing I don't think that gets spoken about enough on Senegal is Mendy, the goalkeeper. If you just put into context that no less than 7 years ago, he was playing in the fifth tier of French football, the equivalent of Boreham Wood, you know, playing Bournemouth yesterday, the fifth tier of French football 7 years ago. He was then without a club 7 years ago and he joined the Marseille B team and he was there for a year. And then he joined Reims where, Stade Reims rather, where that's where he obviously made a name for himself, stayed there for 3 years. But 7 years ago, he was at Boreham Wood's level in France. And here he is now, Champions League winner, AFCON winner. Like, it's mental.
No, they've got a great team, but got that out of the way first just because, well, it was deserved to be spoken about. We can't ignore it. Big, big win for Senegal. Before we dive into the FA Cup, I thought we could just have a bit of a slagging fest about that game that supposedly took place in the midst of all the FA Cup that was apparently the decider of all deciders about what's going to happen at the bottom of the league, and neither of them could be bothered to score a fucking goal. Let's just acknowledge that game first. I mean, you could say one thing, Jace, that, you know, you mentioned that it will take him a little while to set that defence up, and fair play, clean sheet on his first game. But Burnley-Watford, 0-0. I mean, where do you stand on that? I mean, can that even be allowed when you're at that point?
I mean,
absolutely delighted with that result.
I bet you happier. Are.
I mean, if you're Watford, if you take it in literal terms, that is Watford's first clean sheet in 31 games. So look, if you're Watford Football Club and you've just played Burnley away from home, a clean sheet in basically a whole season's worth of attempts, that for them psychologically, given the way Hodgson sets his teams up, could be quite a good big thing going forward. More so than that, they've obviously got Dennis to come back and Saar now back off AFCON. So I've always said that me and Kossi were talking about this last week with Watford, because Hodgson was, I think, announced around about, well, on deadline day, but Watford's front three and their midfielders, their problem is they do have the talent. The problem is, though, they've never been able to gel as a team. They're all individuals. So getting that clean sheet is a massive, massive first step for them. Burnley, on the other hand, I would be very, very concerned if I was a Burnley fan, because Cornet obviously back. Vaghor starting his first game. And it was clear what the game plan was, and that was to get the ball up to Vaghorst, get him to hold it up and then flick it on to Cornet, or, you know, vice versa. And it's fair to say that it didn't happen. Now, it's going to take games for that to gel, of course. Vaghorst has only been there a week, but Burnley don't have time.
No, I mean, we're not going to spend very long. Just wanted to obviously mention it because it was a Premier League game, but I mean, what a chance for both teams to sort of get some points on the board. And yeah, they got one. But I mean, if you can't win those games against those around you, you start to wonder how close it's going to be for them. But yeah, Burnley have waited a long time to play a game, and lo and behold, they go and play that one, and not the result they would have wanted. But here we go then. Let's get into it. FA Cup, the magic of the FA Cup. So it makes sense to talk about the televised ones.
What I want to say before we kick this off is the FA Cup is the very reason and demonstrates the very reason why the modern day football fan is a fucking joke. But I'm so happy I'm not going to go all over the results, all the results, because we're going to talk about them. But I'm so happy that Borough fucking laid it to United, that Boreham Wood got a result against Bournemouth. Because all these modern football fans say, oh, Forest aren't a big club, so-and-so aren't a big club. But FA Cup is history, and these clubs have history, and, you know, Boreham Wood have created history, and, you know, it's
well, their owner remortgaged their house during lockdown so the club could continue to function.
And not only that, he paid 100, he made sure no one at that club, they all got paid 100% wages as well.
Incredible. The thing is, that should be the story of, you know, for the last 2 years, football related. Yeah, we didn't know about it until they beat Bournemouth yesterday. Why isn't that in the news? Oh, it's because the modern football fan doesn't give a shit. They want to know what Ferrari fucking Aubameyang's bought this week. Not being funny, it's bullshit. It really is bullshit.
They won't get recognised with like MBE, nothing like that either, because they're not prestigious enough. They'd rather give it to someone that won their one and only Grand Slam in a high or something like that, you know.
And I bet their owner isn't like, you know, in a 30, 40 million pound yacht, the other side of the world, digging for oil and making a shitload of money from there. As you know, it's so corrupt the way that the money is involved in football, full stop. You only have to look at the Newcastle takeover. But I don't know if you saw it, Jace, but speaking of what you were saying, there was this Man City fan on Twitter absolutely slating the next round against Peterborough.
Peterborough. Like, didn't even know who they were.
It's like, you know, like he's obviously, you know, clearly what? Uneducated and a knuckle dragger, but seriously, what is wrong with people?
Do you know what? I was really surprised at that. And it's because I know a handful of City fans, and in general, City fans get a lot of credit for being quite well grounded because they know exactly where they're coming from.
Exactly.
And that was just, I mean, that to me is the typical football fan, you know, modern day football fan. It's even with Forest, you know, we'll get into the Forest game, but even
we'll talk about them in a bit.
The fact that people slate Forest out, oh, you know, they're not a big club. Mate, half their, like, English football was made off Nottingham Forest, like Brian Clough, like the two European Cups they got. Like, to say they're nothing, like, they're insignificant, like, it baffles me.
Not being funny. Just,
it comes down to context. You know, if you're talking about the modern day and you're saying Forest are bigger than, you know, teams that are in the Premier League. Yes, in modern day, they're not. So, like, I get it when people say, well, people aren't going to join Forest based on history. They're going to join a club based on where they are. Yeah, and you money. Do. You do it on a yearly basis. Like, you know, no player, let's be fair, no player is going to join Forest over West Ham if they've got the choice.
Agreed.
But then when you're talking about history, that goes out the window, and you need to then judge them based on history. And I'm sorry, but teams like Ajax, even if they're in this poncy little Dutch league that people go on about, they are bigger than 75% of all Premier League clubs. Ajax's academy has produced more players than any club could dream of, even West Ham. If they want to bang on about theirs.
There's so many fans who lack so much respect for the smaller teams in inverted commas.
UEFA are the only ones, UEFA are to blame. Yeah. All they wanted to do, and the reason they changed the Champions League to the format it is today is because they're scared of having the big clubs knocked out by these little clubs, which is unfortunately the reason why your Red Star, Belgraves, all of them will never win a European trophy again, because
money.
I mean, look at me and Jason. When Sheriff had beaten Real Madrid, what a story. But UEFA are shitting bricks when that happened, because they think no one will watch it. I remember, but the thing is, we've made our bed, and again, I don't want to digress. I remember when it was Porto Monaco Champions League final, I was thrilled. Two teams that I'd never seen before in a Champions League final. What a moment. And all I remember, and this was before Twitter or even that came around, all I remember is, I'm not watching it tonight. It's boring. Why?
I still watched that final.
Why is it boring? It wasn't a great final, but I'm sorry. And this goes across in all sports. I can tell you now, if the NFL had a final on Super Bowl, Patriots, Steelers, I wouldn't fucking watch it.
Nope.
Couldn't give a shit about the big teams. Same with all the sports. No one, I don't like seeing all the big teams. I've got Man City, Chelsea. What a boring final. I would much rather see Sevilla or one of them get to it. I love it. I absolutely love it. And it's the same with the FA Cup. If I could get, you know, an FA Cup now where it was something like, I don't know, Forest going up against someone like, I mean, I'm hoping it's not Borough because we've got Borough and I hope we knock them out. But at the end of the day, you know, but if it was someone like Nottingham Forest going up against a team like, I don't know, Southampton or something like that, what a final.
And not because the big teams have been playing their youngsters either, because they've actually deserved it. Because if you look at the teams that have been put against Forest this season, obviously the two big guns in Leicester and Arsenal, they put a pretty strong team out. And even when big fans of big clubs turn around and say, oh yeah, it was our reserves, your reserves were worth 130 million quid.
I mean, what a story for the Premier League. Little old Leicester coming in and winning the Premier League. That's a great advert for the best league.
It done some horrible things to their fucking fan base, though. But hey-ho, that's another story altogether.
Could not agree more. And even Leicester fans are saying that themselves as well.
But the general thing being for the Premier League, the reason why it's so successful in America is because any team can beat anyone. Leicester go and win the league and the Premier League starts shitting bricks. Why?
Until they change the rules, because let's be fair, you get less money for winning the FA Cup than you do finishing 17th. That's your problem, right there.
I remember it's been discussed in the past when people have turned around and said, well, why isn't the FA Cup winners getting Champions League qualification? And the big guns will take it a little bit more seriously. And up until this season, I think the big guns are kind of more taking it seriously with the squads they're putting out. However, that also makes the smaller clubs on paper more hungry to actually get through, because no way should Middlesbrough be beating Man United. No way should Forest be beating Arsenal and Leicester. But it makes them so much hungrier. It makes the competition so much more interesting because they're so hungry to win that trophy or get through to the next round or showing who's the big dog. You know, it's brilliant. But yeah, there's no reward for it because, you know, if it really was the Champions League, it's the fourth.
Or if it can't be Champions League, you've just introduced a new Conference League. Put them in that. You're telling me teams like Borough or West Ham or them wouldn't play for that? If West Ham gets sick, fair enough, they get Europa League. Conference League gets handed down. But for teams like, I mean, Everton, imagine Everton was, well, they are. Imagine they're in this and they're sitting there 16th, but they're told if they win the FA Cup, they're going to the Conference League. I know we joke about the Conference League, but when you put it in perspective, what an incentive. There's ways of doing it, but
what do we know?
I would like to add, though,
when you say about the Champions League, a tiny team did get into the final in 2019, I recall. But, yeah.
Fuck off. Let's go then. Friday night. What a game to start off with. What a game to sort of highlight the old FA Cup. Now, first of all, we have got a bit of a serious topic. We're not going to go into it because we've banged on about this fucking thing throughout the World Cup. Unfortunately, it's happened again. All I'm going to say is fair play to the boy for having the bollocks to step up and take that penalty in the first place, regardless of whether he had a choice or not. And there will be many other moments where I hope, as much as he's a Man United player, I hope he's able to turn around and absolutely stick it in their face, because he will. The boy will. He's got a great talent, Alanga. So I'm just going to highlight that, get that out of the way, because we don't need to give attention. And Cossie's got a lovely word that he calls those type of fans, and he'll probably say it quite a few times tonight.
Cunts.
There you go. There you go. See you next Tuesday. Yeah. So we've got a lot of examples, unfortunately, for these fans. Anyway, let's steer it away from these idiots. And let's talk about some hilarious football matches. Because we all got the desired outcome out of the Man United Borough game that we wanted. Man United are done, out of the FA Cup, and Middlesbrough are sailing through into the next round. Now,
and it is quite funny seeing Carragher retweet his argument with Roy Keane again with winning the FA Cup, etc. And that man himself missed a penalty in the first half, wasn't it?
Yes.
And all the fans who are recording it on their little mobile phones, about to get their little main boy, like, you know, scoring the winning goal. Oh, yeah, I'll have to delete that video now. Oh, awkward.
what now? I mean, that's Man United done for. You know, Ranić comes in, you think, oh, this is, you know, he might set up a bit of stability, and then the Jesse Lingard stuff starts kicking in before the FA Cup, which is a bit odd. You know, that got a little bit awkward as well. Saying that he needed to take a break, and then actually he didn't ask for that break, and so on and so on.
He was in Dubai the week before with Rashford, wasn't he?
Oh, God knows. God knows. I don't know what's going on at Man United.
He's been a bit of a fraud, and he hasn't done no better than what Ollie would have done up till now.
He's a bit of a fraud.
Say as you want, Cookie.
I mean, you say that, but I mean, he other than that loss against Borough, the only loss he's suffered since, you know, since being at Man United was a 1-0 defeat to Wolves. Actually, he's won every other game. And
he's been better than Arteta and Arsenal.
Yeah, it's a bit of an odd one. I mean, I would say his performances have kind of overshadowed his point tally, let's say that. I think since he's been in, he's only 2 points off Liverpool, you know, and they're having a worldie of a season. So I think he's stabilised them, but I think the worrying thing for Man United is the performances haven't changed. The way they're winning games hasn't changed. They're not doing what Man United should do. But then again, how long do we keep saying they're not doing what Man United should be doing? They've not won a trophy in, what, 5 years? That's Man United.
It's all wrong. I've said this before. The problem is, even now, he's dealing with players from 3 or 4 managers ago, and he's got bits and pieces from all of those, you know, from Mourinho's team, maybe less Van Gaal's. But there's so many bits and pieces in that team that every manager that takes on that job, they're dealing with 2 or 3 managers' worth of players. Now, again, we spoke about Everton and Benitez and the relationship with director of football and brands being ushered out the door, than Benitez oddly fallen soon after, because it looked like they were on Benitez's side initially. But the problem is highlighted in the fact that he has come in, he's been told he's interim manager until the end of the season, and it's been made public knowledge, not only that he's interim and temporary, but then he's going to be director of football at the club thereafter. Now, to make it a bit more lifelike for us, when we were at school and you were told, oh, it's a supply teacher today because so-and-so's off sick, what's the first thing you do? Dick around, not put your effort in, watch the supply teacher fall asleep because they don't give a shit. It's a makeup of their own doing. And until Man United pinpoint a manager, Pochettino cough, who they've been chasing like a, you know, dog with a tail between their legs for the last 3 or 4 years, until they actually cough up the money for the manager they want and that they envisage taking Man United forward, it won't happen. And the reality is for Man United, that's not mentioned enough, is the rate that they sign players in terms of money. A new manager comes in, he's got no choice but to use those players because you can't sell them.
No. And then the fans will go and protest against the owners who have just spent like £500 million on a new squad.
Exactly. Like, not being funny, right? Harry Maguire. Now, Pochettino might come in and say he's dog shit because I'd be inclined to agree, yes, but probably 80% of managers. But who's going to spend £50 million and give him £300,000 a week in wages? No one, because he's piss poor. And it's going to be the same thing. And what will happen is a Paul Pogba situation. He's been that shit. No one wants to sign him on big money. So what are they doing? Waiting for his contract to finish.
They probably give him a pay rise this summer as well to get him to stay, because that's what the agent's like. That's exactly what the brand is. But yeah, the performance is wise. Well, you know, a player doesn't make your club, but apparently on the stock market it does.
You know, and we're sitting here, and I think we discussed this with at the beginning of the season. A club like Manchester United, when Liverpool have Salah, Mane, Jota, Firmino, when City have Sterling, when City have Jesus, when they have Mahrez, and then Manchester United are sitting there with Rashford from their youth academy, who's a bit inconsistent, and then a 37-year-old Cristiano Ronaldo and a 36-year-old Edinson Cavani. Really? Manchester United?
I mean, because of obviously Man United, we could talk about week in, week out. Any words to say about Borough? bearing in mind, this is FA Cup show. You know, we can talk about Man United and their downfalls week in, week out. We can talk about most of them and their downfalls week in, week out. The Premier League clubs. We don't often get to talk about these teams that are, as we just said, in the FA Cup. So what about Borough? Anything about them that could...
I mean, look, Borough rode the storm and got through it. I mean, Borough deserved it, to be fair. They played really well. But to be at the Stretford end at Old Trafford, away from home, and knocking those penalties away like they did, I mean, unbelievable result.
Yeah, deserved to get to the penalty shootout. And they defended really, really well most of the game. Kept the lights of Ronaldo. It was a first team Man United as well, who, let's be honest, came off the winter break thinking, oh, they're refreshed, they're ready to go again. You think Ragnick would get drilled some tactics into them, get some, you know, get a plan together. They just hung in there, deserved an equaliser at the time as well.
And that was their last chance of silverware this season as well, which made it even more sweeter for Middlesbrough to win that.
Yeah.
And Chris Wilder, great manager. I'm so glad that he's back in football and he's actually doing something good as well.
He's been vindicated, isn't he, to show that he is actually a good manager.
Well, we'll see how Borough get on, as I said. As much as I like the idea of Middlesbrough getting through to the next round, I'm intrigued. I want them to go far, but they can go out in the next round as far as I'm concerned. Because obviously we're going up against them ourselves. On to the next fixture that is worth talking about. And it was nearly a great result. But my God, fucking West Ham. They didn't just do it once. They broke their hearts twice.
I mean, 8 seconds away from penalties. Eight seconds away from penalties.
Well, I mean, it was a minute away from going through in the first place, let alone going through to penalties, because they should have won the game in the 90 minutes if it weren't for the last minute goal.
They were bloody brilliant.
Matt Preston was an absolute beast in centre-back that day. Yeah. Absolute beast. You look at him and you look at him at the end of the game and he looks like he's just been through war. And it's just like, well, he did not deserve to be on the losing side. He was an absolute beast that game.
What a photo as well after the game. I don't know if you've seen it with David Moyes and in the Kidderminster office. I don't know if you've seen the photo. Have you seen it? Having a beer. Have you seen the assistant manager's little desk?
That was brilliant.
Tiny little desk in the corner. But that is what it's all about, isn't it?
Not being funny, this is where the sort of the arrogance goes from the bigger clubs when they're meeting teams like Kidderminster. You saw from the West Ham fans celebration and their players celebrating and the jubilation around West Ham. Technically, that should have just been like, oh yeah, we're going to smash these boys. We're going to turn up and it's like, we won't even get out of the first gear. But by them winning how they did, that was like them winning the FA Cup. And it's just like, I didn't want to see it. And I was gutted that West Ham did actually win that game. However, it wasn't like it was just like, oh, little old Kidderminster, we're going to wipe the floor of you, see you later. It was a game and a half. That was one of the best games of football, I swear to God.
FA Cup tie, that. Yeah, and everything.
Proper FA Cup tie. Brilliant. It was great. We'll go on to, obviously, we'll breeze through a couple. I'm just going to note some, because there's no point talking about them. Chelsea, obviously. Well, saying that, I mean, it was on the red button. Cookie, did you watch the Chelsea one?
I watched the Chelsea Plymouth game, and I'll tell you what, Plymouth gave as good as they got against Chelsea.
They had a last minute penalty, didn't they?
Last minute penalty,
and he missed.
Yeah, I mean, for 15 minutes of that second half, Plymouth were playing Chelsea off the park and had 3 or 4 really good chances.
I mean, I've never seen stats like it. Chelsea had 41 goal attempts.
That didn't tell the story, though.
It didn't. It never does, but it's just hilarious. But, I mean, yeah, the fact that after 8 minutes, it was almost one of those moments where you wondered if Plymouth scored too early.
I think they did score a little bit too early, but then what are you supposed to do in the first 10, 15 minutes?
Oh, well, I mean, at the end of the day... At the end of the day, on 8 minutes, Plymouth had won the FA Cup.
Yeah.
To go to Stamford Bridge.
But then to go and play their style of football against the European champions on their home turf, I tell you, they can be proud of themselves for the way they conducted themselves.
It was just that I was about to breeze past it, and I thought, actually, no, I better not, because fair play to them. They put up a bit of a battle. They actually deserve to get a bit of a acknowledgement there. I mean, I'll go through the ones that were all televised first. That's how we'll split it up into a bit of a segment. Obviously, Chelsea-Plymouth was on the red button. We discussed Kidderminster-West Ham. Another game that was on the red button that, to be honest, I think a lot of people would have probably found watching that game more exciting than Burnley-Watford over on Sky Sports at the same sort of time was Cambridge-Luton. That was actually also on the red button, surprisingly, because it was a 5:30 game. The Championship team came out on top. I don't know if anyone caught any of that. So that's kind of gone as the script would have predicted, let's say that. So Cambridge got knocked out by Luton over on BBC One on the red button. The next game on TV was the All Premier League clash. And my first opportunity to see two new boys in action, Tottenham eliminated Brighton. And I've got to be honest, eliminated them fairly comfortably. I was surprised, actually. I thought Brighton were going to give us a bit of a go, but
this whole thing about Brighton, and also just in general football terms, I tuned into the last, well, it was most of the second half, actually, and Brighton looked really good. I tuned in just before Bissouma scored his goal, and they looked like they were playing well. And then the penny dropped with me a bit, and they were like, oh, Brighton, oh, they've played well again. Oh, they've... But how many times in football, like, I get it, right? But how many times are the media going to stop gesturing off to fucking teams that play well and play attractive football? Football's a results-driven business. I don't care if we play well, but you've got to get the results. And they started going into the whole, oh, Brighton, oh, they haven't got what they deserve. Oh, they've played well. But they've got what they deserve. They conceded three goals. If you concede three goals in a game, you deserve to lose.
I mean, the only one that played like he was worth a lot of money was Bissouma, because he literally dragged them through the mud in that second half.
Is he worth the numbers that they want for him, though?
Yeah, but Cookie, we say this week in, week out, a club can value a player as much as they want, depending on how important he is to that team. Let me just ask you this question. How much are they pricing him at?
If they're asking for 40 million for that Webster, surely Bissouma's got to be worth at least double that now.
50 million, 60 million is what we'll get him. Now, if I was to ask you this question, how much would Arsenal value him right now?
You're talking Arsenal valuing a player.
I'm not asking about the money behind it. I'm just saying, how much is he worth to Arsenal right now?
77 million.
What you need?
He's got to be, yeah.
He's worth what they're asking for.
65-70, I reckon.
I'm not going to lie. If Tottenham could buy Bissouma tomorrow for 60 million, I'd be happy with that. Because I honestly think.
To be fair, you did spend £54 million on Ndombele.
But the thing is, at that time, you judge him on his Premier League performance. At that time, he was a £54 million player. Because that, I've never seen a player play like he did for Leeds. I mean, he absolutely tore it up. At one point, Ndombele, Hussein-Aouar, all of them, they were all like one of the best centre midfield partnership. And Levy's done an absolute wonder, to be fair, going on that. I mean, the fact that he might still get all his money back from Leon after that performance for Spurs for those 2 years is a mind-boggler on its own. But Bissouma carried that team on his own throughout that whole thing. If it wasn't for what was overhanging him at this moment in time, I reckon he will have a few clubs going in for him.
He's done it for two or three seasons now as well, to be fair.
I think he's quality, absolutely quality.
He came with high regard anyway, same as the other midfield player that they signed from the, is it Salzburg, Red Bull?
Yeah.
One thing on Brighton, going off FA Cup slightly, but big news for them today. They've just lost their technical director, who's going to go to Newcastle, I think. And a lot of Brighton fans think he is bigger and more important than Graham Potter. So it'll be interesting to see now, in terms of recruitment, where Newcastle say about value over big money signings. Look, if he can cherry pick the next Bissouma or the next so-and-so, it will sort
Brighton's recruitment's been very good. Yeah. It has been very good, to be fair to them. I mean, when you consider they let go of Ben White and they weren't concerned at all because of the centre-backs they had, coming in. Like, it shows their strength in recruitment. And I mean, you could probably argue, has any other club had more in demand for their centre-backs than Brighton in the past 5 years? Consistently? Probably not. You know, they've actually had people knocking on their door for three of their centre-backs off the top of my head in the past so many years. So fair play to them. But yeah, it was a comfortable win. I thought it was going to be a bit of a sticky one, but I was quite impressed with the two boys that came on for Spurs as well. One of them, Bentancur, for me, looks like he's going to be a bit of a shithouse, which I love. But into the next round against Borough. And then we go on to Sunday lunchtime's game, which was also 3-1, which was Liverpool-Cardiff.
I mean, Cardiff are Cardiff, aren't they? They got to half time, but after that, Liverpool had a bit of a scare with the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I can't believe that wasn't a sending off in a way.
Yeah, I thought that was just sending off. Everything pointed to me being a sending off.
Yeah, initially I thought, well, has he made a meal
against Liverpool by any chance?
Of course it was.
Liverpool's gone.
It would have been against them if it happened.
VAR turned their backs on it, did they?
Yeah. The thing is with the foul, I thought the foul was a yellow card. However, you see that the studs went all down his like side, and you think, well, actually, that is violent conduct, really. Like, it's a yellow card if he doesn't do that. But by him, his studs going all the way down that play, you think, I know everything looks worse in slow motion, but that was lucky.
Yeah,
I mean, not a lot to talk about in that one. It went pretty much to plan. But we get to two games which will certainly have a lot to talk about. One of them's already grabbing the headlines, should I say, because they won the derby. No, I'm joking. It's not even a derby. Leicester, fuck off. So, Nottingham Forest beating Leicester, and I tell you what,
brilliant.
Putting game them to the weekend. Sword.
Game of the weekend for me. Do you know what? Do you know what? I know there's been a lot of romantic stories with Boreham Wood and stuff, but that game had everything. It was a proper, even though Leicester pretend to try and find a rival because they're stuck in the middle of nowhere, but it had everything. The atmosphere was actually...
No, we've just finished speaking about Brighton, Jace. We're on to Nottingham Forest, Leicester now. All right? Sorry, Seagull Simon. Anyway.
It had everything.
That chipmunk's going in there, you know.
You had the arseholes before the game giving it the big ones, you know, from Leicester's side, which that needs to be stamped out straight away in a serious note. You know, people thought Forest were good against Arsenal. My God. That team...
They were better.
Spencer with Johnson... And even the lad they've got on loan, Davis, I think his name is, from Aston Villa. They were absolute carnage for Leicester's centre-backs. And Leicester's centre-backs just bottled it. The defenders bottled it. There is no other way of saying it. They turned up to a derby. They turned up to a Lions den and they got...
Brendan Rodgers has bottled it again.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes when you get Premier League teams playing lower league, albeit... by one division, even though it's like huge gulf in what's seen as quality. However, it wasn't like Forest like battled them, like had the big guns looping at forward, etc. They completely outplayed them from minute one to minute 90. The way that they play football, the way that they press, the way that they attack, they were superb. They didn't have to like just loop it forward and like, you know, hope for the best. They were superb.
They were immense. And the thing for Leicester, I've said this before when we spoke about Leicester, Brendan Rodgers is, I think he's a bit of a fraud, if I'm honest with you. He gets a lot of plaudits, and yes, he's won the FA Cup with them last year. But he reminds me a bit of Alan Pardew. He's known to have a bit of an ego. He always comes into a club, starts off well.
Does a bit of an ego.
Yeah. Has a couple of good seasons, and then... Give it at the end of season two, beginning of season three, and it all comes crumbling down. And I haven't heard his post-match interview, but apparently he got some criticism for his post-match interview as well, the way that he kind of laboured through and was like, well, you know, this, that and the other. And if that's your manager talking like that, is there any reason why the players are shit as well? But you talk about injuries, right? And they keep saying, oh, we know Leicester, poor Leicester, they've had injuries. I mean, for fuck's sake, their back line yesterday, Saintu, again, Saintu's a fraud. He had one good season. Now look at him. He's shit. If you're Brendan Rodgers and if you're Leicester, we've said this time and again with Leicester, they desperately, desperately, desperately need to go through a massive transition in the summer because there are players there. The manager needs to go. Like, I'm not being OTT. I don't know a lot about Leicester, but when you see your teams 3-0 down to Forest in a, that game, right, even though it's not really a rival, but for Leicester fans, for whatever reason, it was a massive, you know, it's a massive occasion. The absolute minimum you expect if you're going to lose that game is 100% effort on the pitch. The way Nottingham Forest pressed that midfield in that game and the way Spence and their wing-backs just pressed and Leicester just couldn't handle it. They could not handle it. And Leicester have been found wanting time and again this season, which is why they're only ever going to finish mid-table. And people talk about Rodgers, oh, he won the FA Cup last year, this, that and the other. People have short memories. They've bottled top four twice. Top four twice after being in comfortable positions. Leicester in a bit of a precarious situation for me over the next couple of years because all of a sudden, they won the Premier League. They had a great ceiling. They obviously qualified for the Champions League, got into like top four, stabled themselves, were attracting some good players. But now, that's fading. And so that kind of legacy of winning the Premier League and then the FA Cup last year, that legacy is starting to wane off now. And they desperately, desperately need to, one, I think, replace manager, but two, chuck some money at the transfer market in the summer and actually the likes of Tielemans get rid.
Vardy's not going to last forever.
But Vardy's done. It's premature.
I think he's done now.
But anyway, let's not talk about Leicester because Leicester was shit. But Forest were bloody brilliant. Let's not take that away from them.
They huge were, credit.
Where's Jed Spence going in the summer?
Anywhere he wants.
How can he? How is he not going to get a big move this summer after the performances he's put in?
I know someone who will want to make his club.
Yeah, I know.
Hello over here. Conte would love him. Tarek Lamptey put in a shit performance and Jed Spence put in a worldie. And I knew that we were looking at Jed Spence anyway from before the game that he played at Arsenal. Yeah, but Conte would love him because of how big he is. He's a big right back.
He is.
Surprisingly.
I'll tell you now, he will be in a Premier League team next year. I said this yesterday before we came on air tonight. I actually think he'll end up at Spurs because if you're him and you're a wing back, there's no better manager at this level to work at than Conte at Spurs.
But if he goes to Spurs, does he stay at Spurs straight away and fight for his place in the team? Or 100%.
He 100% he starts for Spurs. If
Spurs, have you seen Spurs' squad?
But he will end up at a Premier League club. I'm banking on the fact we need a replacement for Joel Ward and he looks at the likes of Elise and Eze and thinks, oh yeah, I'll have me a bit of that for a couple of seasons. A man can dream, but he's definitely going to be a Premier League player next season without a shadow of a doubt. Whether he's for Forest or not, yeah. I don't know. But, you know, why not Palace? But I think if Spurs come calling, he starts under Conte 100%. 100%.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I think Tarek Lamptey was meant to be playing for his Spurs audition and he had a bit of a howler, I'm not going to lie. So
Lamptey for me is good, but the only thing Lamptey's got is pace. Spence has got pace.
He's got pass on him.
But delivery and he can score.
There's one more game, one more killing of the big boys that we need to talk about. Ah, little old Bournemouth, Cossy. Little old Bournemouth.
Lucky old Bournemouth.
Lucky old little old Bournemouth.
Poor Bournemouth, you know, like, Bournemouth, the little vitality.
They only spend hundreds of millions of pounds and waste hundreds of millions of pounds. And owned by a Russian billionaire, you know, plucky old little Bournemouth. Oh, God.
I hate that.
Save me from it.
Around financial fair play like anything. And the
absolute crap. Trigger point, trigger. It was funny. And it's even funnier for me, obviously. I'm sort of like in limbo with Cantwell because he's been given his chance. I know how good he was a couple of years ago, local lad and all that kind of stuff. But the crap that he's been saying recently, I was watching him. He came on at half time against Boreham Wood. So he had 45 minutes and he did absolutely fuck all.
He was
and
shit. I just saw him terrible. Fall over a couple of times.
Bournemouth made five subs. Boreham Wood only had five subs.
What does that tell you?
Poor old Bournemouth.
Oh, dear.
And the fact that they used Todd Cantwell's like still frame as a little picture saying from their own Twitter saying that they'd lost that game, I was like, oh, that's quite sweet, actually. The club that you really wanted to join, wasn't it, Toddy?
I think that only a week ago, Bournemouth were playing Kings Lynn. Fucking hell.
Did anyone catch the stats at the end of the game? They're the only team in the FA Cup that haven't conceded a goal. Five rounds.
Unreal.
Boreham Wood haven't lost a game since October in all competitions. So fair play to them. They're putting up a bit of a fight. Imagine they went and done it in the next round against Old Lamps as well. Like, oh, we can dream, we can dream. Anyway, we get to middle segment. And we actually haven't got a middle segment because we've got no predictions, really. We haven't done it in a while. The only thing actually that I do need to come on to is we did have one round of predictions because Burnley-Watford was actually a rescheduled game, which we previously chose as one of our predictions. And only one of us got a point.
Well, none of us could have predicted how fucking shit it would have been.
Well, one of us got a point because they said it would be a draw, and it was Cossie. You said it would be 1-1 and it was actually 0-0. So you go up to 29 points. So just to remind you where we're at, because it's been a while, Cossie, you're on 29. Jason, you're on 34. Cookie's on 35. I'm on 42. So predictions will be coming thick and fast from here on. So we'll get back to that. But that was the middle segment. We've got to get Will of Wonder back. It's been a while. These double game weeks have killed it. But we need to get it back because we need to get under pressure again. You know, nothing like a good old Bundesliga recap from the old bastard. Hey, everyone loves it. That's why our listeners has gone down, because they can't listen to you try and pronounce Mönchengladbach for
a minute. They would have loved to have heard how Leverkusen got on this week.
Oh, yeah. Can we just give a heads up to Leverkusen there?
What a result.
Dortmund to their own backyard. Cool. 5-2. But yeah, that was the middle segment. Happy days. That was good. I might not even put a music segment over that. Let's wrap up the rest of these games then, because then we've got some predictions at the end. So I'm just going to breeze through them because there wasn't many remaining ones that were standouts, but we'll touch on a couple. So the next game I come to was Everton Brentford, the Premier League clash. 4-1 Everton. Anyone surprised by that result?
A little bit. I thought, unfortunately, I said to Cossie last week, I think, unfortunately, with Lampard coming in, I don't think it'll be good enough long-term for them, but I do think they'll get a bit of a bounce off him to kind of steer themselves away from any trouble. But Brentford again, quite a heavy defeat.
It sounds four like attempts in the whole game, Brentford, against Everton, who are below them in the league.
Plucky old little Brentford, yeah?
Big bounce back.
Oh, here we go.
Manager.
To be honest, I think the biggest headlines from this game was Dele Alli's outfit, wasn't it?
Oh, for goodness sake. Oh,
all right, Glenn Hoddle. Glenn Hoddle,
row up. Get a grip, you prick.
He's an absolute joke. I mean, are we, in all seriousness...
I had them jeans in the early 2000s.
In all seriousness, are we not surprised? Not that I'm calling Glenn Hoddle... Are we not surprised that we have a problem in this country? One, on social media.
When you give people like that airtime.
And two...
You're encouraging it.
Granted, Dele Alli has not been at his best form, but we're all human. We don't know what's behind it. We don't. Like, we joke about it and say, oh, he used to be a great player and now he's really shit. But we don't know what's behind it. But to come after the guy because of the way he's dressed... Really?
And the car he drives as well.
Yeah.
He is a rich footballer earning a lot of money. Are they not allowed to buy nice things? Well, it's not his fault.
It's not even that, is it? He's driven into work. He's in a Rolls
Royce.
And what? No, but it's not even banter, because I'm sorry. Dele Alli, so he sits there, he gets criticised for turning up in a Rolls Royce to work. If it's Ronaldo at Man United, he gets, it's Ronaldo in a Ferrari.
What's the difference?
There's no difference.
He works 2 weeks, Dele Alli, to afford a Rolls Royce, and that's what it is. Fair play to him. But come on.
The thing for me is, the biggest comparable is, Dele Alli turns up in a Rolls Royce and he's dressed like that. Raheem Sterling a few years ago, oh my God, Raheem Sterling shops in Primark. What a weirdo. Like, These footballers cannot win, and it's systematic. Because
what I don't understand is, what if that was the other way around and Donny van de Beek dressed like that and Dele Alli dressed like that?
It's not necessarily about footballers can't win. It's black footballers can't win.
Exactly that. And that is why we have these issues on social media, because whether we like it or not, these things are subtle signs of racism. In fact, it's not even subtle.
100%.
Glenn Hoddle, a guy that in the past has said, I quote, disabled people are disabled because they sinned in a previous life. Are we at any surprise that we have discrimination in the game and amongst people online as we do today for that very reason? Because people think it's okay. It boils my piss.
Well, at the end of the day, look, Andy Gray and that still have a job on being sports. So there you go. That's all you need to know, really, isn't it? And, you know, when you still see people today on Twitter, and you only have to search two people to know that it's still going on. If you search Laura Woods and look at the topics, the only reason she's on TV apparently is because she's good looking. And it's the same with Alex Scott. People always say, oh, she's only on because of good looks. And Laura Woods posted a photo to say, join me on the FA Cup. And the first thing that people put, why are you putting photos with that post? So fucking what? Like, you say she's only on TV because apparently she's a good-looking woman. She posts a photo and then you question it. Laura Woods on TalkSport, she could talk any one of them. And apparently Jamie O'Hara, Gabby O'Bonnor, Darren Bent, all of them, she would talk them under the table about football.
She's brilliant.
She's quality at her job. And Ali McCoys are the best two pundits.
And it's not the only sport
any...
she does.
No, she boxing, darts. She's darts. A darts legend.
Yeah,
she is.
So I'm sorry, it's nonsense. Women in sport, and you're absolutely right. This is what TFD are going to do. We don't watershed this shit. It's racism. It's racism.
It's
saying that Dele
well.
Alli's dressed like that because it's
that is racism, and it is sexism with obviously the Laura Wood stuff as well.
All
but
day.
Yeah, as Jason said, it boils my piss, and it boils everybody.
It's
with
scummy.
Half a brain between their ears. It boils everyone's piss like that.
Another example came out last night about Mark Overmars. Been in his job for 10 plus years at Ajax. He's had to leave his job because of inappropriate messages against women.
Yeah, it's left right. It's a privileged sport at the end of the day. It is nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. So Everton knock out Brentford anyway.
Brentford
score
one goal and it happens to be an Ivan Toney penalty.
There you go. I knew that was coming. Peterborough beat QPR in an all-championship match. Just for that Man City fan, they're in the championship. Just in case you don't know, feel free to look that one up or speak to Adrian Durham and he'll talk to you about them. Southampton beat Coventry 2-1. Southampton always strike me as a good FA Cup team.
Extra time though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was extra time.
Hell of a goal by Armstrong. Hell of a goal.
Yeah, so they're through into the next round. Man City, obviously... turned over Fulham after another team that maybe scored a little bit too early. Huddersfield beating them 1-0, so not much to say there. And then Palace decided to dampen Jeff Stelling's mood. Clearly going for it, though. Looked like you started with a strong lineup, and then Mateta gets a new contract. Is that right?
Palace, was there not?
So, what's that?
Was there a class act by Palace to get the Hartlepool?
Oh, yeah, actually, this actually does deserve a mention, and it's arguably one of the stories of the weekend. So, Hartlepool's manager, his wife, I can't remember the details, I'm not being disrespectful, so I'm just going to say she's been very ill, but essentially she needs annual treatment, and I think it's £5,000 a month. So I think essentially they need £60,000 a year to make sure she gets the treatment she needs. Now, I think it was Thursday night, the GoFundMe page or whatever it was on about £12,000. By the time the Palace game kicked off, because Palace donated a little bit of money to it, by the time we got to 3 o'clock on Saturday, I think that was up to about just shy of 60K. So, and by the time the game had finished, I think they're over 60 grand now. And so Palace have done a really... Palace have come out of that really well. The manager came out and said, look, Palace have me in there. Like, he said he's going to follow Palace everywhere now because what they've done for his wife and stuff is immense. So Yeah, that backstory is absolutely
incredible. He's a class act.
And actually, Palace, even before that, I don't know if you saw, because obviously everyone was anticipating, that's the kind of game you'd want televised, right? Mid-table club versus Hartlepool, potential upset. It didn't make it. So Palace, instead of Hartlepool cutting back on their ticket allocation and obviously the funding for getting fans to the game, Palace paid for all the away coaches to come, and they sold out. I think 4,700 people turned up for Hartlepool. They sold out the whole away end and took literally as much allocation as they could. So backstory to it was great. That was a proper... And that's what I mean about, like, Norwich's chairman. I'm not saying every club would do it, but that's what I mean about, like, having a chairman like Steve Parish at the helm. He gets football. He gets it.
It's not just that. It's FA Cup. Spurs did it with Marine. What was it? Marine, wasn't it? We were meant to face them last year. So what we did is we sold out their stadium and bought all their shirts for them. We've kept them in business for another 20 years just from that one gesture. And I don't think people realise how important that is. And it's what sets up these little love stories between clubs. Marine fans now love Spurs. Hartlepool will forever love Palace now. And I can tell you now that currently it's at £80,974, which is 67% of the 120,000 target. That'd be done by the end of the month.
That, for me, is the best story of this round of the FA Cup. It's what it should be about.
That was for a brain tumour, by the way. So I hope everything goes to plan for him. But I can see that he did say, I'll be forever grateful. And that is what it's all about. You just don't get that week in, week out in any other league game or anything like
and
that.
And it doesn't always make the headlines.
No.
Well, it hasn't.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, it's all about Leicester, yesterday. Not the Forest. It's the fan punching the player.
Exactly.
No one wants to talk about the Palace.
Yeah. It's the racism after the Manchester United game.
But that is stereotyping football.
Exactly.
The football hooligans. They only want to talk about the football hooligan, not about what the rest of the country will do.
If you watch the match of the day, they highlighted what Jason was saying about the manager's wife. Fingers crossed, obviously, everything goes well. But they said that footballers, they get a lot of criticism, which isn't deserved, because they do a hell of a lot away from football, but it doesn't always make the headlines because those headlines do not sell those papers and it doesn't generate the interest, because it's far too easier just to slate the millionaire boys that play football and have worked hard to do that.
Here's the other thing about racism, right? Wilfred Zaha. Wilfred Zaha gets this narrative that he's a moody, non-committal, doesn't care, bad attitude player. I'm sorry, he plays with a bit of passion, right? He puts his foot in. Vinnie Jones in the 80s puts his foot in and put his studs in. No one criticises him. Roy Keane did it for years. Wilfred Zaha, since he was the age of 18 and couldn't afford football boots when he broke into the Palace Academy, went down to JD Sports, by the way, with Dougie Friedman at the time to get his first pair of football boots. He donates 30% of his wages every single month to charity. He set up a foundation in Ivory Coast. Have you ever heard the media speak about that? Or do you just hear about how shit an attitude he's got and how bad a person he is?
Well, we're all in agreement. We know where it stands with that anyway. On to the next one. Stoke beat Wigan 2-0. So Stoke go into the next round. I guess it does come under the list of surprising results, Koss. I'm not going to lie.
Agreed.
You scored against Wolves, which is a miracle in itself, not just because it's Norwich, but because Wolves don't concede many goals. And you won an away game. And you're into the next round with...
And kept a clean sheet.
Kept a clean sheet, even
three
more
different
so.
Goalkeepers have kept three clean sheets in the last three games. That's the first time it's ever happened in Norwich history.
Amazing. And to reward you with that, you've got Liverpool in the next round. Well
done. I'm just glad that's not a
you
carrot.
You've got your half and half shirt on for that.
Yeah,
get your half and half.
It's always Norwich, you know that. But honestly, it's the worst. I'm glad that it's at Anfield, because last time I went during the League Cup when it was Norwich versus Liverpool, the home end was just absolutely full of Liverpool fans that were just chanting, like commenting on everything. It's just like, don't get me wrong, I've got a huge soft spot for Liverpool and everyone knows that. I make no secret of that. However, I'm there to support Norwich. Norwich are my number one team and it just fucks me off when you get so many fans around you. But yeah, just to briefly talk about the Norwich game, we looked good. We made Wolves look a bit average. They didn't really threaten much, to be honest. I think their fans absolutely hated that we beat them. Hence, they were throwing punches at our fans as we were leaving. And then trying to justify it on social media by calling us a bunch of six-fingered inbreds. Yeah, well done. But now Norwich we've done something that hasn't been done for years. And at the end of the day, we've become a little bit of a shithouse team that, you know, we get in people's faces, we take our time with things. When you go 1-0 up, you sort of like start not faking injuries, but, you know, like every other team in the world does
time
it.
Time waste. You're going to
Just a little bit of shithousing, like being a bit of a shithouse. And that's exactly what Norwich needed. A little bit of fire in our bellies as well. And that's exactly what's been installed. And fingers crossed, now we've got some players coming back, but that's going to be key to the rest of our season. Watch us lose 3-0 or 4-0 at Palace on Wednesday and me being depressed again. But at the end of the day, it's exciting times. But yeah, it's a bit guttering getting Liverpool in the next round away.
Well, that was the last fixture of the FA Cup, but it was a good round, I'd say, a good round of FA Cup games, I think. Yeah, we all say the following round, which is due to be played on the 2nd of March at this moment in time, was pretty kind to a lot of the teams. Man City getting Peterborough, Southampton, West Ham, probably one of the biggest affairs. Borough got Tottenham, Luton, Chelsea, Palace, Stoke. Well, that's a battle of the ages, that one. Liverpool, Norwich, Forest, Huddersfield. So Forest have got a great opportunity there. And Everton, Boreham Woods. I mean, Everton have got a pretty tough game there with Boreham Woods. So that's going to be an interesting one if Lamps can turn them over. I mean, it's pretty much favouring the Premier League side, you would say. Where do you think it's going? Anyone willing to take a punt as to what they think the... Obviously, we don't know what the draw is going to be, so... If I was to say, you know, what four teams do you think are getting to the semi-finals? Well, are you going for?
The only thing that I would say is Klopp, for the first time ever, has taken this competition a little bit more seriously than he ever has. So I think he's come out and actually said, I hold my hands up and that's been a mistake. So you never know with them. Like, you know, you would say that Chelsea should beat Luton, but you never know. Luton are playing at home. It's a good ground. It's an intimidating atmosphere. You'd love to see Luton turn them over and the rest of the country would be supporting them.
Obviously, they've got more games in the Club World Cup. They then come back to Palace. Then they've got Lille in the Champions League. Then they've got Liverpool in the EFL Cup final. Then they've got Luton in the FA Cup and so on. So, yeah, that Luton game might come at the right time. But no, I mean, at the end of the day, the FA Cup comes down to how the draw pans out, so no one can say. But there's a couple of big teams all in there.
I'm looking at Borough Tottenham game, to be fair. I don't think... and Palace Stoke, because no disrespect. That's no disrespect to Stoke, actually, because they're actually doing all right in the Championship this year. So you never know. They might dig their heels in and shit out a result.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Southampton turn over West Ham. Southampton always strike me as a good FA Cup team.
Would get a goal against Everton?
I think, unfortunately for them, if they didn't have Lampard, I think they might have done something, but I think they'll have too much Everton. I don't think they'll look at that Bournemouth game and they'll think no way. And I think it'll be one of those where there'll probably be two or three up at half time, I reckon.
Well, we'll see. We'll no doubt cover the FA Cup when it comes back in March. For now, though, let's wrap the show up then and get our predictions. So we've got two sets of predictions, really. I don't know how you want to do this, boys. It's completely up to you. Do you want to do one set of predictions for midweek and then one for weekend? Or do you just want to have a free shot at either midweek or weekend?
Let's do both, only because we'll be talking about both sets of games next week. So we might as well incorporate the predictions at the same time if you boys are happy.
All right, so let's get through this fairly quickly then. So the first set of games are game week 24, which goes Tuesday to Thursday, just for all your knowledge. As soon as you've seen a game, let me know and we can throw it out.
I'll
there.
Go first.
Go on then.
I'll go with two teams that haven't played yet so far. I'm going to go Villa Leeds.
Oh, that was mine.
Only because after the winter break, a lot of these teams have had issues in the FA Cup, haven't they? Struggled to get going. Maybe they've had a game now. They're ready for the league. But these two, straight off the winter break, could be a good one.
What's your score?
Well, I think Villa are going to have too much and I'm going to go 3-1 Villa.
2-0 Villa, please.
2-1 Villa, I'm going to go.
I'll go with you, Cookie. I think it could be 3-1 to Villa. Next game?
I've got a lovely one.
Go on, then.
Newcastle Everton. I'm going to go 2-1 Newcastle.
I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go 2-1 Everton.
I hope you're right.
I'm going to go 1-1. Not all these teams are going to win.
I'm going to go 1-0 Everton. Jace?
I'm going to go Norwich Palace.
Of course you are.
I think it's an absolutely massive game. I think Norwich is...
Midweek Super Bowl, this is.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely...
This is getting me ready for Sunday night, this one is.
Cookie, don't you start. Don't you start. This is a big game in the context of Norwich's season. And Palace's, to be fair. Because if we...
Okay, then 3-0 Palace. Sorry, but...
No way. No way.
It's not even close, Jason. Come on.
No, it's going to be
some credit.
No, I actually think it's going to be a belter of a game, and I think Norwich will give a good fist of this one. I really do.
Yeah, I think this one's going to have a lot of throw-ins. I'm such a dick. I love.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you on Wednesday anyway, Jason.
What? I'm not going to lie. I've already written my score down. I think it's 1-1.
That's what I was going to go.
Jason's like, well, I wasn't going to go that far.
I'm reluctantly going to go 1-1.
I was going to say Desmond Tutu. I think it's going to be a fucking corker of a game. I think a lot of neutrals will be like, Norwich Palace? Fuck off. I actually think it'll be a good game.
I tell you what, if this is 0-0, I will laugh my ass off.
It's the footballing fans' arrogance again, isn't it?
If it's 0-0, then I'll scratch my eyes out because the fact I'm fucking travelling down.
Well, I know what the conversation's going to be over the fucking meal anyway. Jesus Christ. I'll listen to episode 35 while I'm
wearing. How nice the shirt will be that I'm wearing.
Yeah, brilliant. As long as it's not that away shirt, that average one.
Bollocks.
Look at...
I'm going to go retro for Wednesday, me.
What, your Man United shirt?
That's beat me to it.
That was a good one for you.
That was good, wasn't it? That was good. Cookie, I'm going to piss you right off here because my game of choice is Wolves-Arsenal.
Yes.
Yeah, the only game that we're playing this week.
And I've gone, to be boring again, I've gone 1-1.
I'm going to say it just to piss Cookie off and I actually think it'll happen. 2-1.
Of course he will.
Have you got 11 players now?
Last I counted. Yeah, I don't think we win this because Wolves have had that game and I think they've got their eyes on catching us up. I'm going to go 1-1.
Same.
Yeah. Cool, 3-1.
I can't see us winning that.
I can't see Wolves winning it either, though.
So we get to the weekend games then. So from game week 25, 12th of February, all the way down. Well, technically the Tuesday game is part of it, but we can't go that far. So it's till Sunday. So who picked their game last? Me, wasn't it? So I'll go first this time then. Leicester West Ham's mine. And I'm going to go 2-1 West Ham. Don't queue up, boys. Feel free.
I have to agree with you. I can't see... it haven't been another than 2-1 West Ham.
Okay.
Tough one. I actually think this is one where Brendan Rodgers' job's on the line. He might shithouse a result because he needs to. So to set the cat amongst the pigeons, I'm going to say 2-1 Leicester.
I'm going to go Desmond. I think it's going to be quite an exciting game. I think it's going to be a last minute West Ham equaliser as well.
2-2.
Yes, please.
Jason, you pick before me, so what game are you choosing this week?
I will go with... I'll go for Watford-Brighton.
Hodgson?
And
Go on then. Yeah, I bet he does it. Go on.
I think Watford are going to shithouse a result. And I'm going to say 2-1 Watford.
I'm going to go 1-0 Watford.
Ooh, clean sheet again.
Roy will have them organised. I think you'll know more about what Roy Hodgson can do.
I'm going to go 1-1.
I'm going to go 2-1 Brighton.
Cossie, your game?
I'm going to go another Newcastle game because I think that has a huge, another huge potentially brilliant game. So Newcastle versus Villa. I'm going to go 2-1
Villa. 3-1
Villa.
2-0 Villa.
I'm going to go 2-0 Villa as well. No one thinks Newcastle players are kicking them up the arse then. Final one. Cookie, your last game.
I'm going to go for an interesting game. Bearing in mind this team away from home have gone to some of the bigger teams and gotten results. I'm going to go Man United Southampton.
Oh, good shout. That's a good game. Okay.
I fancy Southampton to get a point there, and I'm going to go 1-1.
Cool. Yeah, good shout.
I'm saying Southampton win it. I think it'll be 3-1.
I can't be 3-1. Cool. I'm telling you now, it cannot be 3-1 for them. But
I'm strong. Get a couple. That's a set.
Cotty?
Right, big form.
As much as I want a Southampton win with all my heart, I think it's going to be one of those annoying Man United victories that's just going to be one of those, oh, everyone forgets about how shit they are for 5 minutes at home at Old Trafford on telly, lunchtime kickoff. I'm going to go 2-0 Man United reluctantly.
I'm going to go, just because it was the first score that popped into my head, I'm going to go 2-2. But I will counter that, Cost, and say it will be a Man United last-minute goal to get the equaliser. If anything, I can see it. Well, they are big points. Big points there for double game week. That's some tough games to call as well. And like that, boys, we are done, the four of us. Back on again, which was always fun, and we're going to see some football. So Cossie and Jace, you're off to Carrow Road on the Wednesday. I'm off to Tottenham Stadium with no naming rights on the Sunday.
I thought we didn't know what it was to be at a football ground, and that you could actually go to a football ground to watch football, as some Twitter people say.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Some people just assume that we're all armchairs, but no, we do like to go and see some football. Jason does a bit of travelling. I mean, he's coming down to Norwich to watch that game. Bloody hell!
I've put a lot of mileage in the last few years with Palace. I'll tell you that in terms of the Premier League grounds, I think I've ticked off Etihad tick, Anfield tick, Chelsea tick, Old Trafford tick, West Ham both grounds. West Ham up to.
Do you not have any local libraries?
I don't do libraries. Well, I've been to.
You just named a few.
Yeah, I've been to the Emirates. That was the worst one.
The old classic stadium is always the best.
Yeah.
Right, boys, I'm going to wrap that up. So I will see some of you back for next week, where we'll discuss the double game week and we'll go from there. Enjoy the football matches that you'll go to. Right, boys, good night.
Good night.